and discomfort. "I hope to God this isn't going to take too long," she said. "Start her up," I told Quirrenbach. "Tenor, there's still..." "Just start the fucking thing up," Zebra said, "or the only composing you'll be doing is decomposing." That did the trick. Quirrenbach pressed a button and the machine rumbled into life. It clunked its way along the pipe, moving like a slow mechanical centipede. The machine's front and back moved jerkily, the suction grips hammering the wall, but the part where we were seated travelled relatively smoothly. Though there was no steam in the tunnel now, the metal sides were hot to the touch, and the air was like a steady belch from the depths of hell. It was cramped and dark except for the weak illumination from the basic controls placed in front of our seats. The pipeline walls were smooth as glacial ice, polished that way by the monstrous pressures of the steam. Though the pipe had started out horizontally, it soon began to curve, gently at first, and then to something that was not far off vertical. My seat was now a deeply uncomfortable harness from which I was hanging, constantly aware of the kilometers of pipe that fell away below me, and the fact that all that was stopping me dropping into those depths was the suction pressure of the cups arrayed around the inspection robot. "We're heading for the cracking station, aren't we?" Zebra said, raising her voice above the machine's hammering progress. "That's where they make it, isn't it?" "Makes a kind of sense," I said, thinking about the station. That was where all the pipes came from, the city's great taproots. The station nestled deep in the chasm, lost under the perpetual mist layer. It was where titanic conversion machines sucked in the hot, raw, gaseous poison rising from the chasm's depths. It's out of the way of any jurisdiction, and the people who crew it must have the kinds of advanced chemical tools they'd need to synthesize something like dream fuel. "You think everyone who works down there is in on the secret?" "No, probably just a small clique of workers producing the drug, unknown to anyone else in the station. Isn't that the case, Quirrenbach?" "I told you," he said, adjusting a control so that our rate of progress increased, the hammering becoming a harsh tattoo. "I was never allowed close to the source." "So how much do you know exactly? You must know something about the synthesis process."
"Why would it interest you if I did?"
"Because it doesn't make much sense to me," I said. "The plague made a lot of things stop working. Implants. Complicated ones anyway. Subcellular nano-robots, medicines, whatever you want to call them. That was bad news for the post-mortals, wasn't it? Their therapies usually needed some intervention by those little machines. Now they had to make do without." "And?" "Suddenly something else shows up which almost does the job just as well. Better in some ways. Dream fuel's childishly easy to administer. It doesn't even need to be tailored to the person it's being used on. It heals injuries and it restores memories." I thought back to the man I'd seen thrashing on the ground, desperate for a tiny drop of the scarlet stuff, even though the plague had already subsumed half his body. "It even confers protection from the plague for people who haven't discarded their machines. It's almost too good to be true, Quirrenbach."
"Meaning what?"
"Meaning I'm wondering how something that useful ended up being invented by criminals. It would be hard enough to imagine it being created before the plague, even when the city still had the means to create wonderful new technologies. Now, there are parts of the mulch where they haven't even got steam power, and while there might be a few high-tech enclaves in the canopy, they're more interested in playing games than developing miracle cures. But that seems to be exactly what they've ended up with, even if the supply is currently a little tight."
"It didn't exist before the plague," Zebra said.
"Too much of a coincidence," I said, "which makes me wonder if..."